pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Liberty and justice for all. Good evening, Global Patriots. You're listening to the Global Patriot Radio, the Vito Esposito Show. I'm Vito. Our call-in number tonight, and every Global Patriot, night, day, evening, is area code 319-527-6706. That's area code 319-527-6706. And I'm joined by that great American Big Al. Good evening, Al. How you doing?
I am doing great, Vito. It is good to be here, as always.
Yes, it is, especially today. It's a twofold day. You know, we are going to talk about and remember 9/11/2001, and obviously 23 years ago today, 19 Muslim men financed by Saudi Arabia attacked the United States of America, hijacked four planes, and drove them into the World Trade Center towers, the Pentagon, and it was a group of patriots on Flight 93 commandeered the plane and drove it into the ground, thereby avoiding another attack on our nation's capital. And actually, tomorrow is year 15 for Global Patriot Radio, and we certainly have a lot of people to thank tonight for making this possible. First and foremost, we're gonna do a little more of a formal, but first and foremost, I'm gonna thank you. You were the catalyst behind this, and it was your idea, Big Al, to go on the radio, and we did, and it was supposed to be a half hour gig. It's now 16 hours a week, and it's fantastic. We have a great network, and thanks to your vision and persistence, it came to fruition. So thank you, Al, and you certainly deserve a accolades for having the foresight to tackle this very, what some may call a controversial subject and topic.
Well, I thank you because I couldn't have done it without you. So kudos to you as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, kudos to our listeners and the people in podcast land, all of our friends and families on social media, including Twitter, which is now X. I want to thank Bigfoot, our big patriot. He's in the house. Go to www.bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. If you want a great blogspot, great news, world news, national news, check out bigfootplace.blogspot.com. He does a fantastic job. And thank you, Big, for all you do. Ducky Northwest, our new friend. How you doing, Ducky? Nice to see you. Gulf Dogs, HOV Radio. One of the gentlemen that I first met on Blog Talk Radio was Gulf Dogs, I believe through Holger and Gulf Dogs of Smoke had their own radio show with Loki, I believe, and Iggy Mom. And what a great, great network. I learned a lot from Loki, and his untimely passing really is what it was sad, because Loki was a constitutional genius. And Gulf Dogs and Smoke were very welcoming and always afforded us the opportunity to go on their show, and I thank you for that, Dogs. Hi, Guy. Nice to see you, Guy. Keep me in your thoughts and prayers. Hope you're doing well, and nice to see you. And, of course, we've got the one and only Sue from New Mexico, and we certainly owe Sue from New Mexico a lot. She has been a stalwart for us, putting up with her own personal perseverances, and she puts that aside, and she actually has been a true champion for Global Patriot Radio, and our show in particular. I'm going to take a point of personal privilege, because she's been unbelievable, and she's got a great network on Twitter, and she has been a really strong advocate for Global Patriot Radio and our show in particular. So thank you so much for all of you've done, Sue. It's hard to believe that it's 15 years already, Al. I mean, we're 16 years old, and look at us now.
Scary. And we're worried we wouldn't have enough to talk about, but that is not the case. We have too much.
You know, that's what was funny. I can remember we were sitting in that restaurant. There was four of us, and we were talking about what are we going to talk about? What possibly can we talk about for a half an hour? And it was like, I think I still might have that same sheet that we wrote stuff down on. And it was like, we're trying to figure out, what are we going to talk about for a half hour? You know, hey, there was a story out of Denver. This Canadian Islamist jihadist came down with stayed in a hotel. I think it was the Bradford Hotel in Denver, Colorado, during the 2008 Democrat National Convention. And he they found him dead, and in his room was a canister of ricin, which the hotel was like a half a mile from the Pepsi Center in Denver. And so all the alphabet agencies they descended upon this hotel. And of course the news media they kept it out of the news media, but that was a story that we jumped on. And it was like, you know, we didn't see it in too many media sources. And we were the ones that were reporting on it. And then the story went absolutely dead. I mean, there was nothing else about this guy, and his name was Diarrhea. Not diarrhea, but diarrhea, D-I-R-E-A, I think it was. And that was the one story that we had on our little chart that we were talking about. It's like, what are we going to talk about for a half hour?
Well, today we got 9/11 anniversary.
Yes. And really, this was your vision, because – basically, after 9/11, if people don't know this, after 9/11, probably in 2004, 5, and 6, Islam laid a challenge, and the challenge was basically to disarm the American people, and it was to come to know Islam, and it was come to know Islam under their terms, and then they also challenged you to read the Quran. And when we actually read the Quran, the English version, it was like, oh my goodness. Well, we started to figure out, man, no wonder, we're talking about this. They're saying radicalized, but, you know, you read verses like chapter 4, verse 71, oh, you believe, take your precautions, so go to war in separate groups or go to war altogether. And then you read chapter 4, verse 84, and it says, so engage in war for the sake of Allah. Lay not burdens on any of yourself and provoke the believers. And the book revolved around going to war, you know, for Allah and pleasing Allah and killing the infidels. And then we met this minister while we were on terrestrial radio, and his name was Minister Usama Dakduk. And this man was an absolute wealth of knowledge. And the problem with Usama is that he speaks Arabic. He was born and raised in Egypt, but he's not a Coptic Christian. He's actually a Baptist Christian. And he's a threat to Islam because he speaks their language. And the excuse that you, Al, got oftentimes was, well, you're taking it out of context. You don't know Arabic. You can't read Arabic. And you're cherry-picking verses out of the Quran. And Usama, we're talking to him, and all of a sudden he rattles off in Arabic, the verse in Arabic, the Quranic verse. And then he starts talking about the Bible verses, and then he's translating, and it's like, whoa, no wonder we have gotten ajita when it comes to Usama Dakta, questioning them and actually challenging them. And the ulterior motive was, of course, to normalize Islam, and it was to distract you from basically who was laying war against the United States. And it was Islam. And unfortunately today, you know, September 11, 2023, it marks the 22nd anniversary after the worst terrorist attack on American soil since December 7th, 1941. And back then in 1941, you probably remember the fireside chat. It was President Franklin Delano Roosevelt stated that December 7th is a day that would live in infamy. And little did we know, 60 years later, there would be an attack on America which would rival that fateful day. 19 Muslim men financed by Saudi Arabia had trained to commit jihad on America. They did just that on September 11, 2001. They hijacked four planes, American Airlines Flight 11, a Boeing 767 carrying 76 passengers, took off from Boston's Logan Airport. It would fly into the North Tower of the World Trade Center by al-Qaeda's lead, Mohammed Atta, at 8:42 a.m. While the world was watching the video of that deadly impact into the North Tower with black smoke billowing from the tower, 21 minutes later at 9:02 a.m., United Flight 175 was used as a weapon. It also took off from Boston's Logan Airport, bound for Los Angeles. It had been hijacked with 56 passengers and 9 crew members. That plane, Flight 175, was flown into the South Tower of the World Trade Center. America is officially under attack, and who would do such a thing, you know? And immediately the answers by counterterrorism experts was Islamic jihadist, Islamic terrorist, Osama bin Laden. And there was some chatter that day about something horrific happening to the United States. At 9:37 a.m., while the world was watching in horror at the terrorist attacks unfolding in New York City, watching two of America's most renowned landmarks on fire, American Airlines Flight 77 with 58 passengers and 6 crew members, which had taken off from Washington Dulles Airport for Los Angeles Airport, had been hijacked and the terrorists turned the plane around and targeted the U.S. Pentagon. And at 9:37 a.m., it crashed into the western side of the Pentagon. All 58 passengers and 6 crew members were killed, along with 125 people on the ground in the Pentagon. At 9:45 a.m., the United States airspace is shut down by the FAA, and all aircraft ordered to land at the nearest airport immediately. And it's amazing to watch the picture. If you're watching some of the shows today, you're seeing that particular time period where the FAA chief had immediately stated grounding all planes, and you watch the blips on the screen, and it's all like they're all flashing yellow, and all of a sudden it goes from a cluster to individuals, and then it's like one or two, and then there's none. There's a blank screen. Even international flights are not permitted into the United States. Now, 13 minutes after U.S. airspace is shut down at 9:58 a.m., the South World Trade Center collapses. And we were watching people jump to their death, but it was absolutely a surreal moment watching and listening to that South Tower crumble. At 10:03 a.m., United Flight Airlines 93 had also been hijacked by Islamic terrorists and still not landed, and feared was going to be used as a missile to strike either the U.S. Capitol or the White House. Except the Islamic terrorists got more than they bargained for when many of the passengers of United Flight 93 learned of the 3 terrorist attacks, 2 in New York City and 1 at the Pentagon, decided they were not going down without a fight, and they did not go down without a fight. They rushed the cockpit. They overtook 2 Islamic jihadists, and they overtook the cockpit, causing Ziad Jarrah, who is the leader of the Islamic hijackers, and caused the plane to crash in Shanksville, in a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And one of those, of course, is Todd Let's Roll Beamer, who made the phrase "Let's Roll" a national phrase. He sacrificed their lives. He sacrificed his life, and actually his airline passenger mates sacrificed their lives, including crew, to down Flight 93 before it hit the U.S. Capitol or the White House. Our nation was under attack. And at 10:28 a.m., the North Tower of the World Trade Center then collapses. Both World Trade Centers and 7 World Trade Center buildings are down. They collapse. The 47-story 7 World Trade Center collapse. And September 11, 2001 changed America and may have changed America forever. Immediately following 9/11/2001, there was a sense of patriotism that was unleashed. A patriotism unlike we've seen in our lifetime, probably since not since World War II. Would this patriotism ever end? This level of patriotism should never have ended. But little did we know, it did not take very long for the word patriotism to be associated with nationalism and white supremacy. In less than 20 years, actually. The creation of the Department of Homeland Security was made. The erosion of Americans' rights, irrespective of the U.S. Constitution. And a friend of mine sent a really interesting clip from Friedrich Hayek, an Austrian-British economist and political philosopher. Friedrich Hayek observation, emergencies have always been the pretext on which the safeguards of individual liberty have been eroded. And once they are suspended, it is not difficult for anyone who has assumed emergency powers to see to it that the emergency will persist. And it was so true in 2001, 2002, as it is in 2023, isn't it? And when you think about the level in which the Department of Homeland Security has grown and the power that it wants to wield. And in some cases, you know, border security was the right thing, and it's putting the U.S. Border Patrol under that authority, except under the anti-American Alejandro Mayorkas, who has been negligent in doing his job. But he takes his orders from the anti-American and the anti-constitutionalist Joe Biden and Joe Biden's Marxist handlers. So let's just fast forward to today in September of 2023, and we see how the executive branch of government is using the Department of Homeland Security to suppress speech, free speech in America, attempting to intimidate and suppress Americans from their constitutional rights to their First Amendment rights. Their First Amendment rights of freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom to peaceably assemble, and the freedom to petition the government for a redress of grievances. All being abridged by the executive branch of government, which is using the Department of Homeland Security and now the Department of Defense in doing so, attempting to intimidate and suppress Americans from their constitutional rights to their First Amendment right to free speech. Using the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Defense to determine what speech is acceptable. And of course, the Islamic movement led by the Muslim Brotherhood is relishing they are enjoying this government of suppression. Because it is Islam who has shown their acceptance STEM speech in America, especially if you speak of Islam. Using the Department of Defense to monitor social media platforms to determine disinformation and misinformation based on government standards and government controls. Yet there are subversive groups operating in America who have other plans for America, including our U.S. Constitution, such as the Muslim Brotherhood, and their front groups, such as the Muslim Student Association, the Council on American Islamic Relations, the Islamic Society of North America, IIIT, the International Institute of Islamic Thought. How about that one? The International Institute of Islamic Thought. They're going to tell you and me what to think. The Islamic Housing Cooperative, the North American Islamic Trust, which owns about 80 to 85% of the mosques in the United States of America, the Muslim Youth of North America, the Muslim Business Associates, the Islamic Education Department, the Islamic of the Muslim Arab Youth Association, Occupied Land Fund, the Islamic Circle of North America, ICNA, the Islamic Information Center, the Muslim Congressional Society, which, by the way, the Council on American Islamic Relations are deeply involved in and getting Muslims appointed to congressional offices as aides, congressional aides. Did you know that? Did you know that? No, I bet you didn't know that. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But you have to understand the Muslim Brotherhood's objective in America. And this is one thing that Al taught, was one of the first things that Al taught me while learning about Islam, was the Muslim Brotherhood's explanatory memorandum. And you have to understand what the objective is by the Muslim Brotherhood, because this document was approved by the Brotherhood Shura Council and an organizational conference in 1987. And you have to understand, you have to know the year 1987, okay? Because 1987 was before any of the Gulf War episodes occurred. Desert Storm, Gulf War I, Gulf War II, okay, Operation Anaconda. 1987, the Muslim Brotherhood establishes their creed, their mission statement. It's called the Explanatory Memorandum. And it's the process of settlement is a civilization jihadist process. What all the word means is the Ikhwan. Ikhwan means brotherhood. The Ikhwan must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers so that it is eliminated and God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. Now, why do you bring up the Muslim congressional staffers? Because the objective of the Muslim Brotherhood in 1987, the mission statement for America, was the Ikhwan must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within. Now, we already know that the Democrat Party, the left wing, the Uniparty, their mission statement is to destroy America from within, to destroy our constitutional republic from within. The Muslim Brotherhood's goal that they put in writing in 1987 is to supplant the U.S. Constitution with Sharia. So to destroy America from within. It also answers why the Muslim Brotherhood and their front groups have aligned with the Democrat Party in America. They both have contempt for our Constitution. They both have contempt for our country. And yes, not many are saying that because if you say it, you're considered to be a radical. Right? You don't fit the norm. Well, excuse me, folks. We have to start understanding why such things have happened. Why that supremacy and domination are the two major focuses of Islam, but also money. And what you have inside of Washington, D.C. is a corrupt government. And we can use the term Democrat and Republican, so in this case I'll use the term Democrat Party, because they don't care where the money comes from so long as you have the same objective, and that is to dismantle our constitutional republic and replace it with a true democracy so that the powers to be inside Washington, D.C. remain in power. Well, it's a perfect fit because the Muslim Brotherhood objective is to destroy America from within. So the front groups, you have to get to know, they have not gone away. And just because we've not talked about this and because there hasn't been a terrorist attack, an Islamic terrorist attack on American soil in a year, it doesn't mean it's not happening. The FBI thwarted a potential terrorist attack in Pennsylvania by a convert who was going to use weapons of mass destruction in order to do so just 3 or 4 months ago. So it's ongoing. idea by Islamists now is to stem speech. And when you have a useful idiot in the White House like Joe Biden and his anti-American handlers who are calling the shots, they are actively engaged in stemming speech in America. They're actively engaged in trampling on the U.S. Constitution. They're actively engaged on stemming speech in America. And a curveball was thrown just over the weekend after New Mexico Democrat governor decided that she was going to rewrite the U.S. Constitution and basically line item veto the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. That had to give the powers to be in Washington, D.C., the Democrat Party specifically, agita, because that was not supposed to happen that quickly. Right before the show, Al and I were talking about 9/11 and a clip that Al had sent over regarding an imama in Orlando, an Orlando imam by the name of Muhammad Musri. And Muhammad Musri's narrative in 2013 or 14 or 15 was, and still is, by the way, is the reason why the rationale of 19 Muslim men financed by Saudi Arabia attacking the United States was because America had blood on its hands from the Gulf War and Desert Storm. And interestingly, I was not going to play it, but then last night I'm watching a TV show on Reels, and they had their tribute to 9/11, and they were showing all kinds of clips. And one of the hour segments had CNN's Peter Arnett, and it was on Osama bin Laden. And they had CNN's Peter Arnett, who was granted an interview by Osama bin Laden over in, I believe it was Afghanistan, where Osama bin Laden first took refuge after the attack on the United States. And Arnett asked bin Laden why this happened. And he says, America has blood on its hands. And I'm listening to the interview that Peter Arnett conducts with bin Laden, and he said exactly what Imam Musri of Orlando states 14 years later. So here is Imam Musri in his own word. And you see, folks, this is what you have to listen to. Don't believe the dawah, okay? Because when you have a devout fundamental Muslim and his belief system, he stands with his Muslim brothers and sisters because he's a devout fundamental Muslim. Now, one would think you would denounce this terrible terrorist attack, which, one, kills 2,973 people, which does billions upon billions of dollars of damage of property, but then also changes U.S. policy. And then you find out that Islamic clerics have the same thought process as what those that we deem Islamic terrorists, but they all have something in common: the Quran and the Islamic belief. So here's Imam Musri, in his own words, which is exactly what Osama bin Laden told CNN's Peter Arnett 14 years previous. It has a little bit of an intro to it, about 15 seconds.
But with the American population, there has always been a level of trust and love and respect because Americans did not have any blood on their hands in the Middle East. But that began to change after the Gulf War, after Desert Storm, where hundreds of thousands were killed in Iraq and surrounding areas, and it became an issue to people there. It generated radicalization among the youth, especially in the Middle East. And that radicalization fomented and culminated with 9/11.
Now, Al, you have firsthand knowledge that this, aside from adding the sound effect of a jet airliner, what Imam Mousri stated in that meeting, I believe it was a luncheon, that tape was not doctored. Those words were not altered or filtered. That was the exact words that was spoken by an Islamic cleric who is a leader of how many, of the Central Florida area when it comes to Islam. No mosque is built without Imam Mousri's blessing. Is that correct? And you know firsthand that's an undoctored.
It runs about 20 mosques in the Central Florida region. And the beauty of that tape is that at that meeting, he had a PowerPoint ready to go. But he had, there was a technical malfunction. So the PowerPoint he wasn't able to use it for his speech, so he ended up having to freewheel it. And he was speaking off the cuff, and in this moment, we caught him speaking the truth and blaming the United States for 9/11. Pretty amazing stuff, but, as 9/11, 20 years ago, we're no longer at 9/10. That was we were in ignorant bliss before 9/11. The United States went into 9/12 mode, and that's lasted for 20 years. And now, unfortunately, we are in 9/13, and the attacks of September 11th they're not considered especially significant, sadly to say anymore. The concern about Islamic terrorism ranks in the low single digits behind everything else. And 9/13, 1,000 trending concerns, some vital, some completely unimportant, have vastly eclipsed not only the barbaric mass murder of thousands, but the recognition that we are at war, and that war is far from over. In fact, the Chinese Marxists have taken the number one threat matrix. And Islam has not gone away. There's been numerous threats that have been foiled, but people don't want to hear about it anymore. And I guess it culminated with President Biden shutting down Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan. Bagram Air Force Base was our last stronghold to go after the Taliban and the jihadis that we started fighting after 9/11 that were responsible for that fateful day where 3,500 Americans were murdered. President Biden, that was one of the biggest betrayals, and there have been many. For me, the closing of Bagram, because that put an end to fighting jihad in that region. And now the Taliban have taken over, and all the lives that were lost, all the money that was spent over the last 20 years trying to rebuild Afghanistan failed within a week of us leaving Afghanistan and the Taliban taking over. So we're right back where we started. This story is not going to end. And how it continues is going to take another event like 9/11 to happen. It's been 22 years. So I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and sadly, when you look at the chronology of events since the attack of 9/11, you actually can go back to 1993 when the first attack on the World Trade Center occurred, which people forget about, when bin Laden, and I believe it was the blind sheikh, had attempted to blow up the World Trade Center by blowing up the parking garage using a massive amount of explosives. And I believe, was it 1,000 people were killed just in that small events. And then you had the two bombings of the U.S. embassies in Tanzania and Nairobi. You follow that by the what happened in, I believe it was the USS Cole. And from there, it just metastasized. The USS Cole and Bill Clinton did nothing. President Clinton at the time, that was October of 2000, 17 dead, 37 wounded. And then you had the attack on 9/11, 2,973 people are dead. And yes, we did take action. We, the United States, did take action. Whether it was right to go into Iraq, you know, of course, the Monday morning quarterbacking is in place right now because, let's face it, 23 years has been removed. Afghanistan, once we changed the rules of engagement, that handcuffed our great military, and that's the sad part of it. We should have went in, and we should have leveled Afghanistan. We should have made it basically a sand trap, to use the golf metaphor. And sadly, now, as you rightly said, we had position, we had strength, we had the ability to also monitor the communist Chinese, but we had a strategically located Air Force base or air base, and that was Bagram Air Base. And basically, Joe Biden and his handlers castrated the United States of America. And then they lied about it. They lied about the withdrawal. They lied about the immediate withdrawal. 13 Americans are dead. And last week, of course, we played a clip from one of the fallen soldiers' father who has no respect at all for Joe Biden. And you heard the clip. I mean, I can play it again because it has to deal with 9/11, Afghanistan. And we turned Afghanistan over to the communist Chinese. The communist Chinese shed zero blood, zero. Not one life was lost from the communist Chinese. And they are able to walk in 23 years later and now have the mineral rights to Afghanistan. They've also petitioned and started buying off the Taliban so they can drill for oil in Afghanistan. We, the United States of America, abandon Afghanistan thanks to Joe Biden and his anti-American handlers.
Yep. And here at home, the demographic conditions are coming into place for a next wave of Islamic terrorism, which will depend not on intentionally coordinated attacks, but domestic terror cells following up on the lone wolves like the Boston Marathon bomber and the Pulse nightclub shooter. And these people are coming in through our southern border. It's not just Mexicans. It's OTNs other than Mexicans. And we are getting Africans. We are getting jihadis. We are getting Shia Muslims coming in from South America. They are flooding our border. They are building cells ready to attack at a time of their choosing. And they haven't stopped. There have been four or five major attacks that have been thwarted. So they are trying, and it's going to ramp back up again because it's not 9/13 after all. Before 9/11, we had a sense of, we understood that Islam was rushing towards us, and Greenfield still has that sense now. And, Biden's screwing us again with the southern border and setting us up to be a weaker country, an undefendable country, when we let the enemy within our gates. It's almost like a Greek tragedy happening again in real time. The Trojan horse is our southern border, and we're letting it happen with open eyes, open arms, and open wallets.
And you know, Al, and let's not forget about the northern border. I saw the statistics today that the northern border, some illegal aliens, illegal migrants, have been flocking through our northern border to the tune of 76 different nations coming in to the United States, penetrating through the northern borders. And, again, they're from different locations, Venezuela,
from Arabic nations. You talked about the one thing that people must understand is that, you know, Iran is not just a terrorist regime that is located solely in the Middle East. We all know the demographics where the conservatives know where Iran's located in the Middle East. I mean, obviously, if you're a newer to history, you're not sure that you're taught exactly where the location is where Iran is. But Iran is just not solely active in the Middle East. You know, it has its hands in funding Hezbollah in Lebanon. It is now funding Hamas. But more importantly, and the reason why it's also imperative that we get our southern border under control, which, of course, this regime has no intention of doing so. They just give you absolute lip service and try to give you a soundbite as cackles Kamala Harris did, you know, this past weekend. But the tri-border region, and if you know nothing else, if you have time to Google it, Google the tri-border region, which I believe is Brazil, Argentina, and Uruguay. And it's an area where Islamic terrorists are trained, and they're funded by Iran. Okay, so the significance of Iran is not the fact that the Ayatollahs are running things in the Middle East and they consider the United States the great Satan and they consider Israel little Satan, but they also have their tentacles, which they enable their Islamic terrorists to train in South America. And this also enables these trained terrorists, Islamic terrorists, to travel up through Central America and through our southernmost borders. And really, if the President of the United States would actually stick to his oath of office to protect and defend the United States, both foreign and domestic, Joe Biden could be charged with treason for not protecting the United States southern border. It's a national security threat. And Al is so right. You know, we have 23 years later, and we've basically 22 years later, and we have basically taken, you know, things for granted once again. But the mission of the Islamic movement is quite simple. Okay, I read to you the explanatory memorandum. And that was quite clear that the Iqwa must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers so that it's eliminated and God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. This is God's religion is Islam. And it goes a step further. The co-founder of CAIR, Omar Ahmad, stated that Islam is not in America to be equal, but to become dominant. The Quran, the Muslim book of scripture, should be the highest authority in America, and Islam the only accepted religion on earth. Now, these people are actively, this organization is active within the United States. It's actively using our Constitution to destroy the Constitution. It's using our First Amendment to destroy the First Amendment. And when you have politicians and when you have a government where this falls on deaf ears, it's the citizens to speak out. To speak out against this injustice that's being done and put out by our government. Look, the Biden-Harris regime are negligent. They are seditious, and they're actually bordering on treason. You know, and it's symbolism over substance, the symbolism of Kamala Harris, Vice President Harris, being given the title of border czar. And she goes to some obscure location down by the border in Mexico, which has no relevance to what really is going on. Joe Biden, he makes one trip down to, aside from the other trips of falling up the stairs and tripping over sandbags, but he makes one trip to the southern border, and suddenly, you know, he's absolved from any wrongdoings, any neglect of the southern border. In the meantime, we have tens of millions of illegal aliens penetrating our borders, and also with the Biden-Harris regime transporting these illegal aliens to cities and states all around the United States. So much so that even the mayor of Sanctuary City, New York, is having AJA because his welfare rolls are becoming sated. They can't afford to take care of the illegal alien influx that they've received. Now, Mayor Adams likes to call the governor of Texas a radical, but isn't it something? He called him a madman. Oh, really? Governor Abbott's a madman. In the meantime, it's actually Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and their handlers who have created this national disaster for not securing America's southern borders. All he had to do, all Biden and his handlers had to do, was continue with President Trump's policies, and the border security would have been maintained. But remember, the goal by the globalists was, one, to get rid of Donald Trump, and two, was to get rid of everything President Trump did, irrespective of our constitutional republic, irrespective of our foundation and our foundings. And then it was to get the chimpanzee Joe Biden to start declaring that the biggest threat to America is not terrorism, but it's MAGA. And you see, this is what's going to cause the United States of America to be attacked once again. Because Islam doesn't lose their focus. Islamic jihadis do not lose their focus. Islamic jihad is about domination. Islamic jihad is about supremacy. The co-founder of the Council on American-Islamic Relations stated that Islam is not in America to be equal, but to become dominant. Now, CAIR has been around since 1995, and it was born out of the Islamic Association for Palestine that was raising money for terrorist organizations, including Hamas, which is on the U.S. terror watch list. And the Islamic Association for Palestine was shut down. And two of the co-founders, Omar Ahmad and Nihad Awad, walked across the street virtually and opened up a new company called CARE, the Council on Islamic Relations. Now, why these two men weren't deported, why weren't they arrested, why weren't they sent, you know, back to Palestine for raising money for terrorist organizations is beyond pale. I mean, if we truly had an issue, why wasn't this entire operation shut down? And now the same individuals feel emboldened. And they use free speech to destroy free speech. You see, their intolerance for speech is clearly what is helping their advancement. Because if you dare to challenge Omar Ahmad, Nihad Awad, or CARE, you're an Islamophobe. And that term, Islamophobe, is simply a creation by the Muslim Brotherhood to instill fear into the hearts of the disbelievers, to shut down you and me. Shut down you and me. If we talk about Islam, way, shape, or form, other than being a religion of peace, you're an Islamophobe. Why hasn't CARE condemned Osama bin Laden? Why is it that CARE continues on their mission, Islam is not in America to be equal, but to become dominant? And no one challenges these words. Why? I think maybe somebody might be challenging these words right now because I see somebody's got their hands up. And so, how about we bring them on right about now? I think we've got that Viking who's going to be in the house here.
Good evening, fellas. Hoser,
how you doing?
How are you? Hey, Holder.
Well, great show so far. I'll be as brief as I possibly can. This is obviously a big day for me. It always has been. I loved what Al, the way you laid it out about the ignorance and the bliss of you know 9-10, and then the 9-12 mode, and then unfortunately what's transpired into this 9-13 mode. That's just absolutely spot on. And let me just quick first throw a number at you guys. 43,939. That mean anything to you?
The number of dead since 9/11?
No.
Okay.
So back after 9/11, a website after our infamous president during the time when he came out and sold out this country and every Christian and Jew and Buddhist and every other religion in this world, when he sold us all out by claiming that that Islam is a religion of peace. These guys opened up a website called thereligionofpeace.com, and it is still up and running every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the box with that number, 43,939, it says this: Islamic terrorists have carried out more than 43,939 deadly terror attacks since 9/11, 2001. Think about that. 43,939. Today we're talking about one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and at the site, I just noticed that just yesterday, I couldn't wait for the anniversary today, just yesterday, I'll read one paragraph. It says, quote, six Christians were kidnapped by terrorists in the Mile 6 area of Jalingo. Area resident Emmanuel Moses told Morningstar News in a text message, quote, these terrorists, too, killed two Christians, one, Blanco Alex and his wife, while many other Christians were injured during the attack. That was just yesterday in Nigeria. So I'll guarantee you if you go there tomorrow to the site, they'll have one that happened today. So with that being said, I just wanted to call in just because, you know, 9/11/2001, you remember what day of the week that was?
It was a Tuesday.
Yes. It was a Tuesday. And I remember telling somebody at one point in time over the years, I said that Bin Laden, they picked 9/11, you know, for the significance. But they also picked it because it was a Tuesday. Now, those towers were filled with offices, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's basically office buildings. And in an office building, there are more people at the office on Tuesday than any other day of the week. Monday, you have people that take three-day weekends. Friday, same thing. Wednesday's hump day. Thursday, getting ready. Some people cut off for a four-day weekend. Tuesday, it was jam-packed. They picked that day because of the more casualties that they could inflict. So that morning, I was actually scheduled in the afternoon to fly out of the Twin Cities. Ironically, I was scheduled for a flight into Dulles in D.C. And, of course, saw the news come on. And I went into instant rage, okay? I didn't even feel this remorse. I didn't feel sadness. I didn't feel grief. I mean, I went into instant rage. But I sat there and I thought to myself, you know, I don't understand this. I mean, I was from Minnesota. You know, at that point in time, this is 10 years before Obama brought 120,000 Somalis into Minnesota. You know, there was probably 18 Muslims in the entire state of Minnesota. I'd never met a Muslim in my life. I didn't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to come to grips with how somebody could do this, why somebody would do this, I started to do the research. And it changed my life. It changed my life. And I remember going to the Internet and searching, you know, because I thought I'm the only one that seems to be this pissed off about this, you know. And I kept doing these searches, and I kept running across this place called Little Green Footballs. And I'm like, what the hell is a little green football?
Yeah.
And I'd never been to blogs. You know, I wasn't a blog guy. Blogs were, you know, relatively new then and all that. And I go to this Little Green Footballs, which is a blog, and then lots of, thousands of comments made and all that kind of good stuff. But anyway, it was the day that I found that site where I found people like me that were pissed off, that were pointing the finger at the true culprits behind this, at the deceit, at the evil, and everything else. And bottom line is, I met a lot of people there, people I grew close to. And at one point in time, we ventured off into a private chat scenario, and we decided in 2009 that we were going to get together at that first rally in D.C. And I'd never met any of these people, and I ended up meeting people like Loki and met Bigfoot, dozens and dozens of people I'd never met before. I'd known them for years, but never met them. So I'll be quick here, but at the rally in 2009, you know, we thought about 50,000 people were going to show up, but 2 million showed up. And I was adamant, because everybody that went to that rally had, you know, different things on their agenda list. I mean, people went there to protest Obamacare. Some people went to protest Obama in general. People wanted to rally patriots together, all that kind of stuff. I wanted to keep the fire lit about 9/11. So when I went to the rally in 2009, everybody's got their stars and stripes shirts on, and they got their flags and all this kind of stuff. And I'm walking around D.C. on the mall, and I got a T-shirt on. And it's a white T-shirt with blue letters on the front. And the letters read, "This is what a Zionist looks like." And you know, we're talking Holger here, you know, the kid's like a born-again Christian, raised Lutheran for 50 years. Because part of the reason was because the word Zionist just inflames Muslims, just inflames them. And I had a lot of people stop and take my picture that day, by the way. But anyway, going off of what Al said, you know, I think it's just criminal how people have forgotten. I remember Barack Obama I can't remember what year, but one year at the 9/11 remembrance, just before the anniversary of 9/11, Barack Obama came out and said that, you know, we got to move on a little bit, folks. We need to make this a day of service. You know, he basically said, stop remembering that day. Just go down and work at a fucking soup kitchen. That's what 9/11 means. And I just want to thank you guys, because for all these years that I've been listening to your show, you're the only ones that have kept the fire lit. You're the only ones that have taken the stance of proving to the world that Islam is not a religion of peace. And the people on your network, the same thing. You've done it for years now, and I give you credit for hanging in there, because it's no fun. You know, it's one of the biggest protected species in this country right now is an Islamist. And I remember going to a rally a few years after 2009 for Veterans Day, and I was sitting there waving a flag like a bunch of other people were. And The guy that organized the rally was a guy named Colonel Riley, great patriot, former military, of course. And people had pointed him out to me, but I'd never met him. But anyway, I'm waving this flag, and people got Old Glory waving, and they got Gadsden flags, and they got Come and Take It flags and all that kind of good stuff. Well, my flag was a white flag with two blue bars, one on the top and one on the bottom, running horizontally. And in the middle is the Star of David. So it's the Israeli flag that I'm flying. And I look, and here comes Colonel Riley walking, making a beeline right for me. And I told the gal, Mary, next to me, I said, oh, shit, I'm in trouble now. And he walks up, and he goes, he says, hey, glad you're here. I said, glad to be here. And he introduces himself to me, and I introduced myself, and we shook hands. And he says, I see you're flying the Israeli flag. And I said, yes, sir. And he says, good. I'm glad you are. And he turned around and walked away. But I was doing that because, you know, we had suffered this on 9/11/2001. I wanted to remind people that the Israeli people have been going through this for 60-plus fucking years.
Yeah.
You know? This wasn't This wasn't some one-day wonder thing, okay? That's why I wanted to point out there's been 49,000 or 43,000, whatever the number was I read off. You know, this wasn't just some flash in the pan kind of get-even moment. This is a daily thing. So congratulations on 15 years, boys. Keep up the great work. And we'll talk at you later.
Well, hold your weight before you go. I want to thank you.
Yep.
You as well, because you were one of the first people that I met along with Golf Dogs and Smoke. And you know what? There was some sort of chemistry there. We've never met, and yet you had an affinity for, you know, our movement, and you had your own show, and you had me on a couple of times, and I took great pleasure of being and an honor to be on your show as well, along with Dogs and Smoke. And I learned a lot from you, and I've learned a lot from, you know, Smoke and Dogs, and it's just made us better. And you're right. You know, we can lose that passion, and it's amazing that we've done it for 15 years. There's one thing that I'm really grateful for, and that is that Al and I have a chemistry. And you know, he's been a great teacher in all this. I've learned a lot from Al. And I've learned a lot from his guidance as far as, you know, where we go and who we read and who we speak to as far as, you know, learning. And it's a never-ending process, but it's an uphill battle. And you know what? We learn something new every day. This article by Daniel Greenfield about 9/13 is brilliant. And it's backed up, Al found it in memory. It's backed up by an article in 22 years since 9/11 and counting jihadis await their opportunity. You know, it's things like this that keep the passion going and the fire going. And I'm telling you, it's people like yourself and Sue who and Bigfoot and Duck and Dogs and Guy and you know, everybody who makes this thing happen, and we have a great following, and thank you for your passion as well.
Yeah, because
well,
I think that you are the voice of the silent majority, and we are not so silent anymore. And I think there's, for our voices, we may feel like we're few, but I think we are many, and people are having enough. And as COVID starts rearing its ugly head again, the FDA just approved the new booster today, of all days. It's kind of ironic that they approved the booster today, but they did. And I don't know about you, but I'm seeing people wearing masks. I'm getting a sense that this whole COVID thing is ramping up again as we go into the November 24 election. And our voices need to be loud and strong as they possibly can be, because this stuff is not going away. It's only getting worse and worse as Marxism grows in the United States. And you are the man to talk about it.
And you guys have done a really good job of, you know, you point out every week about, you know, what the media does to the truth in this country. You know, you point out the fact that the mainstream media in America is simply a propaganda arm for the left and for the Marxist and so forth. But what we can't forget is that the mainstream media has done as much to cover up for the Islamic terrorists in this world as they have for the Marxists.
Oh boy.
They're like best friends. You know?
Yeah.
Now, I think part of it is because after I can't remember the name of the place over the magazine over in France, Charlie Hebdo.
Charlie Hebdo. Yep. Charlie Hebdo.
Yeah. After the Islamic terrorists bombed that place and killed about 8 people, you know, journalists all of a sudden became very friendly towards Islam. So I think they're more scared than they're just, you know, on the Marxist side of it is just agenda and ideology and so forth, where I think they're just flat out scared to say anything bad about Islam. But you know, I think one other thing, and this is just a suggestion moving forward, is you have done one of the best things you do is to tie that the Muslim Brotherhood, what do you call it, a memorandum? No.
The explanatory memorandum.
Yeah. If you know, that is so eye-opening because here's proof that this is their plan for America, okay? But If I'm not mistaken, there are plenty of examples in the Quran and throughout Islam that basically, you know, when they say that they're here to dominate, it's the fact that they are to be the only religion. That's the plan, okay? Not just in America, every corner of this globe. And I think that's important for people to realize because, you know, most other faiths in this world don't operate under that premise, okay? It certainly, you know, Christians are tasked with becoming fishers of men, you know? But that's fishers of men. They're there to recruit people. They're there to attract people. They're not there to enslave people or threaten people to their religion. And so I think it makes more sense in the American situation just because it's enough a tougher nut to crack. But the bottom line is it's part of the basis of that so-called religion of you know, no tolerance. You're either one of us or you're against us, and I think moving forward, you could, you know, I don't know what kind of examples there are in the Quran or whatever, but I think there's something to be said for that and so forth. But you know, it's one last thing, and then I promise I'll get off here. We can't forget the second 9/11 in Benghazi,
which is. Yes. I'm going to talk about that tonight, too.
Yeah. So I just wanted to throw that out because every time this anniversary comes around now, I think of those guys on top of that building doing everything they can to keep to stay alive, man, and fought like gangbusters, man. And
yep, they were abandoned by Hillary Clinton.
Yep. Hillary Clinton and Obama left them sitting there like sheep. And, you know, I'll tell you, you know, to watch that woman sit through those sit through those hearings on Benghazi. And if you remember, she got 2 weeks off because of, you know, supposedly she tripped on her fat ass and hit her head on a coffee table or something. And all these senators going, oh, so good to see you here and healthy. Fuck her.
What difference does it make?
You remember
beat
her
the crap
line
out of her. Yeah, you think the table hurt? You know, it's just mind-boggling. So I'm going to get off before I get too riled up.
All right.
Well, all right, boys. Keep up the good work.
You provided a good segue into Islam and some Quranic verses and some terrorist attacks. So thank you. Thanks for your support.
Right.
Thanks for your friendship and hold your thank you, man.
All right. Another 15 years, boys. See ya.
I like it. All right. Have a great week. I like that guy. Holder's a good man.
I do too. And you know, we have some great discussions and dialogue, and you know, he brings up some great points. And the one thing that we do try to do is we can be superficial in talking about these terrorist attacks. What we try to do is go a step further. And I'm going to use a couple of examples. And he brought up Benghazi, and there's one. So four Americans were sacrificed 9/11 2012. And they were sent to their death by Barack Hussein, Satoru Obama, Joe Biden regime, including Hillary Rotten Clinton. And those four individuals were Ambassador Christopher Stevens, CIA Sean Smith, Navy SEALs Tyrone Woods, and Chris Doherty. The significance of the death of Christopher Stevens, the U.S. ambassador, it was like 25 or 30 years before, I think it was 1969, prior to that, a U.S. ambassador was killed on duty. And was this a gun-running episode with Barack Hussein, Satoru Obama, and Hillary Rotten Clinton? Of course, that issue was swept under the rug. And the fact that there were two warehouses that were empty, which were full of weapons that were being reacquired by Ambassador Christopher Stevens, so was he silenced? And why was the U.S. compound in Benghazi allowed to be overrun? Many of you can remember the testimony by Hillary Rotten Clinton, who stated, what difference does it make if it was a bunch of guys out for an evening walk? And this is how well she trivialized this terrorist attack. I think I have a clip on that.
Matter of fact, the fact is we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator.
That's Hillary Rotten Clinton, and she shamelessly stated that was it a protest or a bunch of guys out for an evening walk. It was neither. It was a terrorist attack. And you see, this is what the U.S. media, including Candy Crowley, allowed to be swept under the rug. And this is what infuriates Americans, including Chris Tonto Peranto, who was actually 1 mile away when they heard the shooting, when the distress call came in from Ambassador Christopher Stevens that something was brewing, and now the compound, the U.S. compound, was being attacked by a bunch of men out for an evening walk with AK-47s and rocket launchers. And you see why Americans are angry? They're angry because of the protection that was afforded to Barack Hussein, Satoru Obama, an anti-American, Hillary Rotten Clinton, who had the audacity, the shameless audacity to state, what difference does it make if it was a bunch of guys protesting or men out for an evening walk? They were not out for an evening walk. It was a terrorist attack. And by the way, folks, it was not because of an obscure movie trailer, which 12,000 people had seen, by the way, prior to 9/11/2012. Now, I believe that it was a gun-running issue. It was weapons being reacquired by Ambassador Christopher Stevens, who was doing what he was told to do, and then he came collateral damage to cover up for it. Can you believe that the secretary, a Secretary of State, would make such a cold-hearted statement? What difference does it make if it was a bunch of guys protesting or out for an evening walk? Now you all can relate to this. I mean, like Tsunami, I'm sure when you go out for an evening walk with your husband, you know, you walk along, you know, the lakefront. You don't have a rocket launcher, nor do you have an AK-47. Judy, do you carry an AK-47 with you when you go out for an evening walk when you're walking with your dog? I mean, this is absurd. And the fact that Hillary Rodham Clinton was never held for her actions, her inactions. And who made the call for Chris Pontoparanto and his team to stand down and not give aid to a U.S. ambassador in distress at an American compound? For 27 days, the Barack Hussein Sattar Obama regime dismissed any type of White House press briefings, not to answer any questions. This is the lack of transparency that's carried over today to the Biden-Harris regime or the Biden-Harris-Obama regime. Ambassador Stevens, CIA Sean Smith were in distress. Navy SEALs Tyrone Woods and Chris Doherty were there to fend off perhaps 1,000 jihadis. Al-Shabaab, Al-Qaeda operatives. They were simply out for an evening walk. They were protesting because the false narrative by Barack Hussein Sattar Obama and his little minion, Ambassador Susan Rice, was that an obscure movie trailer was the catalyst for this protest. That was a flat-out lie. Because that Muhammad video had less than 12,000 views. I know because on 9/10, a friend of mine from Israel sent me the link, and I remember that there was about 12,000 views of this. So you tell me with these primitive individuals who are living in caves, how they have access to internet, that they watched an obscure movie trailer. But there were patriots that were 1 mile away from the Benghazi compound and another U.S. compound told to stand down. There was no air support that could have been dispatched from Sicily to aid and assist the compound. Nothing. And in the end, Christopher Stevens, the ambassador to the United States, was dead. CIA Sean Smith was dead. Navy SEALs Tyrone Woods and Chris Doherty were dead. And Hillary Rodham Clinton had the audacity to look Sean Smith's mother in the eye and tell Pat Smith that she was sorry. And they would get to the bottom of it. And they did nothing. They did nothing. That was 9/11/2012.
They didn't know that.
With all due respect. The fact is, we had 4 dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator. Now, honestly, I will do my best to answer your questions about this, but the fact is,
honestly,
people were trying in real time to get to the best information. The IC has a process, I understand, going with the other committees to explain how these talking points came out. But, you know, to be clear, it is, from my perspective, less important today, looking backwards, as to why these militants decided they did it than to find them and bring them to justice. And then maybe we'll figure out what was going on in the meantime.
I mean, what a cold, callous, hollow woman, a heartless woman. Absolutely heartless. And the Barack Hussein Sattar Obama regime pranced out Susan Rice, U.S. UN ambassador, to further the lie in Benghazi, further the lie about an obscure movie trailer for 27 days. She even went before the United Nations prior to Barack Hussein Sattar Obama going to the United Nations. Assalamu alaikum.
one cover-up after another. And, of course, the U.S. media complied. Why? Because their fellow Democrats, okay, Barack Hussein, Satoru Obama, Susan Rice, Hillary Rodham Clinton, all made statements, and they continue to mislead the left-wing media because they're all sycophants of the Obamas and the Clintons. And yet there's no closure for Pat Smith and why her son died in Benghazi. There's no closure for Christopher Stevens' family because Hillary Rodham Clinton and Barack Hussein Satoru Obama lied. Susan Rice lied. There's no closure by Chris Daugherty's and Tyrone Woods' his family, including Tyrone's father. There's no closure because these people have no heart in those souls. And as Holger stated, you know, we try to bring light to this because it's never ending. And the media who we held up to hold others accountable, to hold our government accountable, is myopic. It only looks in one direction, and it looks to the right. And it sets a different standard, when in fact it should be the standard in government. Those serving in government should be held accountable. And we can look also to how Trump was treated, President Trump was treated. You know, one of the false narratives that was furthered by Nancy Pelosi and the left wing was that President Trump banned all Muslims from coming into the United States, and that was a flat-out lie. That was a flat-out lie. I'm going to jump a little bit forward because in 2017, President Trump realized, of course, he was concerned about national security, and one, he addressed the border security, and he brought in Tom Homan as acting director, and boy, Tom Homan did a bang-up job in helping to secure the southern border. One, from illegal entry. Two, from Islamic terrorists. Three, from drugs. That wasn't 100% stop. But also, President Trump was concerned about what? National security. And he issued a directive placing seven countries on a no-travel list to come into the United States. And those seven countries included North Korea, Venezuela, Iraq, Syria, Iran, Yemen. I'm missing one other one. Somalia. It's too bad it was a little bit too late because it maybe could have kept incestuous Ilhan Omar out. But okay, seven countries. Now, you want to talk about false narratives, okay? And the Democrat Party and the U.S. media, which now seems to be controlled by the Democrat National Committee, the DNC media, all furthered a lie. Now, we all know North Korea and Venezuela, two terrorist countries. You can't vet one immigrant from those nations. First of all, Kim Jong-un will not let any of his people outside. And though anybody who escapes, if they're lucky enough to escape, you're not going to vet through the North Korean government, and say with Venezuela. But there are five other countries, Libya, Syria, Iran, Yemen, and Iraq. You can't vet Muslim citizens coming out of those countries. First of all, the theocratic terrorist regime of Iran will not vet any citizens coming out of there. Libya, there is no stable form of government. Same with Syria. Yemen was heavily involved in war. No stable form of government. And Iraq, the same thing. And President Trump was right to place a ban on those five nations, those five Islamic countries, and North Korea and Venezuela. And then this is where the narrative becomes false. The left wing in the United States that was led by Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, President Trump, as banning all Muslims. Now, so you all know, there are 57 Islamic states in the world. Just go to the Islamic Association, the OIC, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the OIC. There are 57 Islamic nations that are listed. Now, if President Trump was banning all Muslims, he would have banned all 57 nations. But if you're a Muslim coming from Saudi Arabia, if you're a Muslim coming from Jordan, if you're a Muslim coming from Egypt, if you're a Muslim coming from Qatar or United Arab Emirates, you're able to come into the United States because there's a vetting process. Every country has a vetting process. But you see, the globalists, they don't want America to have a vetting process. And the consequences of not having that vetting process and what we are seeing today is you have Mayor Eric Adams pissing and moaning in New York City because he's a sanctuary city, and now he can't accommodate the 114,000 illegal, unvetted, unvaccinated aliens that are poured into his city. But you're a sanctuary city, Mayor Adams. Why don't you fix it? Ah, that's right, because your Medicaid goals have become sated. You don't have the financing and funding. But you know what? If America had a president who was concerned about national security as President Trump was, you wouldn't have these problems. And you see, if you were truly concerned about Islamic terrorism, you would look at that map and say, okay, there's no stable form of government in Libya. Iran will not give us any information. And aside from that, the theocratic terrorist regime of Iran wants to kill and wipe America off the face of the earth, as well as Israel. So we're going to leave them on the no travel list. It's not a ban on all Muslims. But you see, this is how disingenuous the left wing is in America. This is how unpatriotic the left wing is in America.
Well, it gets worse because there's more breaking news. An American military news reports that the U.S. is releasing $6 billion, five Iranians, and a prisoner swap deal with, you guessed it, Iran. The Biden administration issued a waiver for international banks to transfer $6 billion, with a B, billion in frozen funds from South Korea to Iran as part of a prisoner swap with the Iranian government. The Associated Press said the prisoner swap agreement will allow five American citizens to be released from detainment in Iran. In exchange, the United States will release five Iranian citizens currently held in the United States and will allow $6 billion to be transferred by international banks to Iran without the threat of sanctions. That is a blank check. Congress was not notified until Monday of the Biden administration's decision to sign off on the economic sanctions. Monday's notification to Congress also was the first time the Biden administration announced that the release of five Iranian prisoners would be part of the prisoner swap agreement. So what President Biden did is he's releasing five Iranians back to Iran, giving Iran $6 billion, and we are getting five prisoners back.
Okay, so basically,
I forgot.
What?
I forgot.
Oh.
There was one condition. Blinken said that the money must be used by Iran for humanitarian purposes. So you can sleep well at night. Everything will be okay. Move along. Nothing to see here.
So I wonder if John Lurch Carrier was part of that negotiation team. You must use it for humanitarian purposes. Okay, you give us the money. We will be a very humanitarian. We will be, right. Okay, there we go. You see, if Joe Biden is not charged with treason, then every member of Congress, irrespective of party affiliation, is derelict in their duty. I mean, that is the most naive, but also, Al, if you're a businessman, a woman who travels internationally, do not stop over in Iran.
If you're an Iranian citizen who's living in the United States, do not go back to Iran, because now it's profitable for the theocratic terrorist regime of Iran to take prisoners.
Yeah, each prisoner is worth over $1 billion. Gust me, because this money is going to be used. This money is going to be used for evil. It's going to be used for arming Iran. It's going to be used for Iran arming Hezbollah over in the Middle East. This money is going to destabilize Iran even more. This money is going to make it harder for Israel to be the one country that's going to go and then take out Iran's nuclear programs. This money is going to help Iranian nuclear programs to make them a nuclear power and totally destabilize not only the Middle East, but the entire world. Talking about betraying America, you talking about that Biden should be put in jail for aiding and abetting an enemy of the United States of America? Absolutely. And the Congress should be humiliated that they weren't even notified of this. It's time for McCarthy to go.
It's time for all 535 members of Congress to go. Okay, so what we're saying, to put it in perspective on what you just said, Al, so 965 days ago, President Trump had communist Russia and the theocratic terrorist regime of Iran at their knees. Their economies were buckling. The terrorist regime of Iran was going through severe pain. Why? Because the sanctions were working. And the people of Iran were growing greatly discontent with the theocratic, with the Ayatollah and his thugs.
Right, and don't forget about that. Don't forget about the Abraham Accords was the glue that made all that happen, because it put all the Sunni Muslims in the Middle East against the Iranians. So President Trump President Trump single-handedly isolated Iran into a non-existent threat. Yes, they were a threat, but they were greatly diminished. And now the opposite is happening.
Well, the opposite is happening as well, because, you know, the globalists needed to get rid of Trump, and they installed this frail old fraud, Joe Biden. Joe Biden couldn't get elected on his own. There's no way, shape, or form. We all can talk about it. He got 81 million votes, and that's obviously it's hogwash. But there is a reason why Joe Biden never obtained the Democrat Party nomination. He's a liar, he's a plagiarizer, and he's a dishonest individual. So now, suddenly, Joe Biden is the darling of the Democrat Party. Somehow, he goes from third place in the primaries, wins the South Carolina primary, and everybody drops out. Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar, they drop out. He's running third, tied with Pocahontas. And suddenly, Joe Biden emerges. Now, we sit here and say, why? And now we know why. Because this is yet another example of how and why Joe Biden was installed. I mean, 965 days ago, Russia is at its knees financially and economically. They're not even contemplating going into Ukraine. 965 days ago, Iran is at its knees. 965 days ago, America is energy independent, to the point where even OPEC is starting to reel, and America is becoming an exporter of oil. Our strategic petroleum reserve, it was filled to capacity, 714 million barrels of oil. And in less than 965 days, Joe Biden and his radical anti-American regime have drained the strategic petroleum reserve by 60%. There's 355 million barrels of oil in the reserves. And they just released some additional petroleum reserves to artificially reduce prices, gas prices, because OPEC now has stated they're going to extend the 1 million barrel a day cut until the end of the year. And what's happened? China has emerged as the world leader. China is buying oil from Iran, which is prohibited under the embargo, but China is now buying oil from Iran. So that's helped to enrich Iran. The United States is buying oil from Russia, and on the back door, we're sending $40, $50, $10, $30, $60 billion to Ukraine to fight Russia, and we're buying oil from Iran. I mean, from Russia. You have China now forge a relationship with Russia. China's forged a relationship with the United Arab Emirates, with Saudi Arabia, and Qatar is now making BRICS a viable, the BRICS nations a viable a group to the G20, to the G6, to the G7, excuse me, to the G20. And they've now expanded the BRICS nations from 6 to 12 nations. All while Joe Biden is eating chocolate chip ice cream and telling lies and actually sleeping. Oh, and by the way, telling lies. I would be remiss if I didn't mention, and I found this, and I've seen it now. I started seeing it on Newsmax today. But I can't believe the slap in the face that Joe Biden and his handlers gave to the people of 9/11, to the city of New York, to the memory, to the lives of 9/11, where that frail old fraud, Joe Biden, was the first president since 2001 to not go to either Shanksville, Pennsylvania, the Pentagon, or New York City. Somehow, this frail old fraud had to be flown to Vietnam and then to Alaska, 4,200 miles away, to avoid being at the 9/11 ceremony. Now, I know that Joe Biden gave an answer last week concerning the East Palestine, Ohio tragedy, the environmental tragedy, because it's such an environmental administration, where he said, you know, I had a choice to go between East Palestine or Hawaii, and I didn't have the time to go to East Palestine, really. So I'm sure that Joe Biden didn't have time and was caught by surprise that there would be commemorative ceremonies, memorial services in New York City on 9/11. Okay? Every fucking year, 9/11 has a ceremony in New York City. They have one at the Pentagon, and they have one in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Every year on 9/11. And somehow, Joe Biden is out of the country. He's AWOL. And why? And I'll tell you why. Here is what I think, and you won't hear it in the media, of course. One of the reasons why Joe Biden was not set up to go to New York, one, he doesn't have the mental capacity to do so, okay, because he'll go off script, and they can't afford to go off script, and he makes it about him. Oh, you know, about I, okay, like Barack Hussein to Obama. The other part is, if he goes to New York at this point today, and he meets with Mayor Adams, somebody outside of the DNC press, some journalists will pepper him with questions concerning immigration and the fact that Mayor Adams lamented how he has 114,000 illegal unvetted aliens in his city and he has no help. And they will ask Joe Biden why he didn't secure the southern border and why is this happening. Joe Biden can't afford to answer that question because he's too fucking stupid to answer the question. And the teleprompters could not be loaded fast enough for Joe Biden to give excuses as to why, other than blaming President Trump for the issues at the southern border. You see, there is a motive and objective with this regime. There is a reason why he was flown out of the country. Joe Biden was flown out of the country. And sadly, the disrespect that Biden continues to show to the American people and to the victims' families of 9/11 is reprehensible. And Biden's mental acuity is failing right before our eyes, And there are no more excuses that can be given other than now the Democrat Party is in they're discontent with Joe Biden and running. That's all horseshit, folks. That's nonsense. That's a distraction. Joe Biden has given them probably another year more than they thought they'd have before they were bringing the imbecile Kamala Harris. And as Newt Gingrich said the other night, Kamala Harris is dumb. She's a dumb person, and that is so true. But Joe Biden's giving them a little bit more mileage, and they figure if they can keep him away from the press as much as possible and keep him alive on some sort of ventilator, they can get to the 2024 elections. And then they can make him a sacrificial lamb, and they can bring in their Prince Charming, whoever that might be. But the fact is that Joe Biden now is a liability, and they don't care. Because as Holger stated, it was Barack Hussein's Attorney Obama who started to trivialize 9/11 and its memorial. Make it a day of service. Fuck you, Barack Hussein's Attorney Obama. It's not a day of service. It's a day of memory. This is the worst terrorist attack on American soil since December 7th, 1941, a day that will live in infamy. And certainly 9/11/2001 is a day that will live in infamy. How dare you? How dare these Marxists trivialize a date that killed 2,973 people, brought down our landmark, the Twin Towers, and attacked our nucleus of government, Washington, D.C., including the Pentagon? Huh. Oh, my God, Al.
Oh.
Please, go ahead. I'm done.
Well, on a side tangent, the Gateway Pundit reports today another obscene breaking story is that Minnesota is set to give about 81,000 illegal aliens driver licenses. Applicants are now allowed to start the process but won't be able to officially apply until the new law goes into effect on October 1st, the new law is dubbed Driver's License for All. The Minnesota Department of Public Safety had a big press conference, happy that this type of policy is going to be implemented October 1st. 81,000 illegal aliens are going to get driver's licenses. What good can come of this? Absolutely nothing. But what's going to come next is these 81,000 people with driver's license will now be granted amnesty to vote in the November elections. I see it coming now. I am like a soothsayer who can see the future.
Well, don't forget now, along with those the driver's licenses, by the way, comes housing stipends. And comes medical care. So that's not in the article, but they also get that as well.
Ah, so if you live in Minnesota, I would pack your bags, sell your house, and get the hell out while you still can. Move to
amazing.
Florida. Move to Texas. The climate is better. You can golf year-round, and the taxes are lower.
Even Tennessee. There's no income tax in the state of Tennessee.
Yeah, Nashville's a beautiful city. But I get the hell out of Minnesota. Not only is it cold, but it's going to become a lawless, wild west. Can you imagine 81,000 illegal aliens on the road? If you're an illegal alien, yeah, you may have a driver's license. Oh, I don't need insurance. Oh, I don't need to register the car. I've got this driver's license. I can drive any car I want anywhere, anytime, whether it's mine or not. I suspect carjackings are going to go way up, and accidents are going to go way up. People are going to get killed and hurt, and, gosh, the insurance companies are going to get slaughtered, no pun intended.
Well, and the losers will be the citizens of Minneapolis because they will have no recourse to recoup any type of losses other than their own insurances. And if they, if a person doesn't have insurance, you're now paying the tab and you're paying your deductibles and all that other such because the state of Minnesota acted negligently. But when you're a common issue utopia, I guess you know, everybody lives together, kumbaya, right?
Yeah, and I tell you,
what difference does it make?
When you get hit by a 2,500 pound hunk of steel, your body breaks. Our bodies are very fragile, and you're putting these people into vehicles, and they're going to hit people, and people are going to get hurt. Lives are going to be dramatically changed for the worse. I mean, even a fender bender going at 15 miles an hour can whiplash your neck so bad, you'll be in pain for the rest of your life. I've seen it. I've seen it so many times. Another disturbing story. When's it going to end? And it's all just today. These are two horrible breaking stories between Iran and Minnesota. And this is just what we're hearing about.
Well, you know, if you go to the Gatestone Institute, you'll see the article and the way they started giving the timeline with regards to the negotiations with Iran. And that's one thing I can say, and that Al has been really good about, and it's finding the right articles to read in the right players. And the Gatestone Institute is another periodical, and you'll find it also at bigfoot'splace.blogspot.com. He puts links in that to the Gatestone. They do a really good job in evaluating this particular regime and what they're doing with Iran. Now, when you start enabling Iran, and Iran now is flush with cash, just remember, they help finance Hezbollah in Lebanon. They are financing Hamas, okay, in the Palestinian territory. And more important, that affects us directly, us, the United States, is that Iran funds the tri-border region in South America. And that would be Uruguay, Brazil, and Argentina. There is a point where all three of those countries meet at a certain point. And that's where Iran is running terrorist camps, terrorist training camps. And those terrorists come up through South America, through Central America, and cross into the Mexican border, over the Mexican-U.S. border. Not to mention, while we're focused on the southern border, you have 76 nations now have been caught penetrating our northern borders through Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, America's right now, the door is open. We have a regime that has acted seditiously and with treason, and their negligence in securing the United States has made it very easy now for yet another terrorist attack. Now, while we watched how the hierarchy for the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the upper level, has abused their power and how they become so partisan, the ground game of the FBI is still very effective, and they thwarted a terrorist attack in Pennsylvania with a convert to Islam who is going to use some sort of weapon of mass destruction to terrorize America. So the act of terrorism is not dead. Even though, you know, after 9/11, we've had several terrorist attacks in the United States, including Fort Hood, Texas, where a soldier of Allah, Nidal Hassan, Major Nidal Hassan, killed 13 of his fellow soldiers, wounded 30. You know, we've had some other terrorist attacks, including Chattanooga, Tennessee, and, of course, the Pulse nightclub. And the Pulse nightclub was an Islamic Jihad attack. No other way to put it, the jihadist Omar Mateen was canvassing locations inside of Orlando, including Walt Disney World, Universal Studios, and he found a very soft target. And that was a gay nightclub called the Pulse nightclub. And sadly, this also has been discounted by the media in this country, where they've done a disservice to the American people and has not listed it as an Islamic terrorist attack. Why? Once again, the campaign by the Muslim Brotherhood has been very effective, hasn't it?
Yep. I do have a good story in addition – that bad story, the Bearded Patriot reports Republicans use Trump arrest tactics against Democrats. And this is out of Atlanta, Georgia. Georgia Republican Attorney General showed that the gloves are off by charging 61 Marxist radicals based on the same law that was used against Trump. Several months ago, we reported that leftist Marxist radicals have been trying to stop the building of a $90 million law enforcement training center in DeKalb County's South River Forest, which is just outside of Atlanta. And they've been staging protests, actively going against police, destroying property. And in order to get their way, these Marxists have been using terroristic methods. So earlier in the year, Governor Brian Kemp declared, quote, "In my state, domestic terrorism won't be allowed. We won't stop until extremists who use violence and threats to get what they want are brought to justice." And these anarchists, so in January, the Attorney General warned the radicals who have been helped by groups like the Democrats and other leftist groups by saying, "We are not Oregon, we are not California, we are not the Capitol. It is not permitted for you to enter our state, disobey our laws, hurl rocks at structures, cause property damage, and shoot police personnel. It's accurate to say that we are charging you, and you are going to be charged. How is that for refreshing information?" And since then, dozens of anarchists, Vito, including a lawyer from the Southern Poverty Law Center, have been indicted in connection with the Stop Cop City movement. Three dozen people have been charged with terrorism. Three people have been charged with criminal intimidation for passing out flyers called the State Cop a murderer for killing a violent extremist. In May, three anarchists who worked with the Atlanta Solidarity Fund were indicted for stealing from organizations and laundering money. Long and short, RICO is being put into play, and this is how you get rid of the Marxist vermin in Atlanta. This story is refreshing. Amongst all of the bad, something good is happening, and this is what good, strong leadership looks like. And Brian Kemp, he's a little squishy on some things, but on this he got it right. And that this is how good policy is made. This is how good governance is enacted. And the people of Atlanta are going to be better off for it. And the rule of law will prevail. And that once, if this happened all around the country, our country would be a much better place. So kudos to the governor of Atlanta for doing the right thing on this issue. And now you just got to take care of the rest of that hornet's nest in your state.
Fantastic. Good positive story to end on. We have about five minutes left.
I'm a ray of sunshine, a ray of super sunshine.
Yes, you are, Al. And you know what? It's been 15 years of bliss, and I want to thank you, and I am enjoying this and learning a lot. And, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention one lady who, may she rest in peace, Kel Fritzie. She's a great late Canadian Red Fox who was certainly passionate advocate for bringing awareness to the advancement of Islam in the West. Kel was also one of our hosts, and she was a friend to all the hosts, including Paul Sutliff, Minister Sama Daktek, and many of our listeners, including Sue from New Mexico, who I knew she knew. They were quite good friends. Annie, Southern Sense Talk Radio, and Jeff from the English Defense League across the pond, one of our friends from across the pond. She has been missed, and her untimely passing was certainly a shock to all of us and has certainly left a void. So we want to say hello to, and we want to recognize our friend Kel Fritzie, who is part of the Global Patriot Radio Network. Also want to thank Moving Forward, a great patriot who proudly served this country. I see Boy is in the house. Bringing on Boy, nice to see you. And also our big fat soft underbellies. Belly, what a guy. He's a naturalized citizen from New Zealand who gets it. He now sees America that he doesn't recognize. And he's a transplant legally from New Zealand, and he is one passionate patriot. Audrey Russo, a great American patriot who has her own radio show on Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
Audrey and Mr. P do a great job. They are great patriots, so check out Audrey's show at www.audreyrusso.com, and she has been absolutely fantastic. You know, and I didn't mean to make light of this, but, you know, one person who has been with us probably for about the 14 years as a guest and now as one of our hosts is Minister Osama Dakda. He and Christy have a show right here on Global Patriot Radio every Saturday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Minister Osama Dakda is a wonderful person. He is an inspiration. He's an inspiring man. He is with the Straight Way of Grace Ministry. If you ever have the opportunity to hear Minister Osama Dakda when he comes to your community, and he talks about Islam, he talks about Christianity, please take me 2 hours and an hour or 2 hours and attend. That man is a wonderful man. There's something about him that he has an aura about him that is incredible. I've been fascinated by it. And when I'm in his presence, there's something about him that really brings out something positive. And he's also exposed the Council on American Islamic Relations for the frauds that they are, the intolerant frauds that they are, because they go around the country and they follow Minister Dakda. And they try to get him kicked out of venues, which means that they're suppressing his free speech in the United States of America. So don't believe all this noise about UN Resolution 1618 about combating intolerance. The biggest foment of intolerance is from the Islamic world, including CARE. But Minister Osama Dakda, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, check him out on Saturday evenings. Great man, a great show, a wealth of knowledge. This coming Wednesday, we've got Hank Jones and Poly Sports at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And Alan, I'll be back next Monday evening at 6 p.m. You know, thank you for joining us. We thank you for the 15 years. Thank you, Bigfoot, our big patriot, bringing on boy, Ducky Northwest, Golf Dogs, iGuy. Thank you, Lucid Libertarians. And thank you, Sue from New Mexico. Thank you all in podcast land. We appreciate your friendship. Those of you on Twitter, Tsunami, Judy, they call me Tom, Publius. Thank you guys so much for and gals for being part of our network, and we can only be successful with your support. Al,
well stated.
Parting shots?
Adios, amigos. We'll see you next week.
And thank you to Big Al. He's a big reason for the
thank
success
you.
Of this network. So,
you
all
thank
be
you,
safe
Vito.
Out there. May God bless America.
Worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the man who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Yeah, that was a quick 2 hours. Holy crap.
Hey. Oh, that was a good ending.
Yeah, thanks. You know, it's we got some great people. It's really nice. And, you know, it's hard to believe, Al. It's 15 years. Can you believe it? Holy crap. I can't.
Yeah. That was very good how you named everybody that's been literally involved with the show, either as a listener and callers, helpers, and a lot of people.
It has, and you know, can't going through the enough. List, I was, you know, this past week I've been, you know, going through and writing stuff down, and it's like, oh my God, it's like, wow, you know, the people that have been involved in helping us, and actually, who took a liking to our show and are a real good supporter. So it's really, it's cool. Mm-hmm. It really is. It's a, what a move to Blog Talk. It really, we've made a lot of friends here.
Yeah, it means there's other people out there with the same, that are on the same political wavelength as us. So if they're out there, it's got to be multiplied by thousands. And I think that we're in the silent majority. And who doesn't like freedom and liberty? Oh, the Marxists,
right.
And the Democrats.
The Marxists.
But other than them, excluding them, everybody loves America. The idea,
you know,
the idea of America. I can't imagine living anywhere else.
I know. And that's what the troublesome part is that we're watching these people take that from us, and that's what's really, that's frustrating. And I don't care what your party affiliation is, but the fact that you're engaging in these types of acts is basically treason.
No, in the NFL at the Chiefs Lions game, I don't know if you saw that, but the black they did the black national anthem at the Chiefs Lions game. So now it's screw the NFL again. I'm done with them. No NFL, you know, F the NFL. Trying to separate us like this. There's one national anthem, only one for everybody. This black national anthem is just meant to separate us. I thought we were done with that. I really, really did. Naively, I thought we had, as a country, had moved on, but no, it's only getting worse.
I mean, how can they continue that divide? I mean, and look, the 2024 elections are upcoming, and you know, they need a new cause. And you know, they're really concerned, the leftists are really concerned about President Trump, and they're concerned about we the people. And they're concerned that we the people, you know, are not going to tolerate these lies and misinformation from a government such as the Harris-Biden or the Biden-Harris government. I mean, Joe Biden's an embarrassment.
Right. And the story we didn't get to is the cops. There was three black women that went in and they were stealing booze. It looked like a Target. I'm not really sure what store it was, but they were just putting bottle after bottle after bottle into their bags, and then they left. People watched them and nobody stopped them, but the police were out in the parking lot. So when these black women, one of them was pregnant, by the way, I guess her baby was thirsty and the baby needed some booze. But this woman won't get the mothering award for the year. In fact, she won't get anything because she was shot. Well, anyway, she went into her car with her accomplices, and then the cops tried to stop her, get her out of the car, and then she drove the car off. The cops had to get out of the way quickly, and they shot her. They shot her dead. And the result, I think one other person in the car might have died too. But the result is that the Black Lives Matter movement within hours was out in force protesting with hundreds of people taking over a street. Signs were made and they were protesting the cops shooting this criminal, even though there was clear footage of them committing a crime and not obeying police officers. I'm like, they're starting this crap all over again. And then the FDA agrees for the new booster for fake COVID. They're starting that up again. I don't know about you, but I'm seeing people wearing masks again.
Yes.
And it's weird. It's weird. It's mainly black people. I don't know why. I was in the post
that
office.
I haven't noticed.
The only clerk wearing a mask was a black postal worker, and the only person wearing a mask in line when I was at the post office was an elderly black woman.
I don't know what it is.
I was
at a supermarket, and the cashier was black. She was an older woman, and she had a mask on.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I didn't even think about that.
It's just an observation. Age doesn't matter, young, old, it's across the board. Not that white people aren't wearing masks either, but it's just an observation, and it's, you know, it's nothing. It's just you see people wearing masks, and you know, that's that. It just is. Doesn't mean a damn thing. Yeah. It just is. It's just weird.
Yeah, you know, back to the looting aspect of it. So the one remedy you can have for looting is you shoot the perpetrators. Just enough's enough. They're going into stores and they're robbing stores, and the consequence is that these corporations, these companies are starting to close stores in inner cities or in the cities in which these large lootings are occurring. So now you have
Nike in Portland.
And then Neiman Marcus in San Francisco, and then the Walmart the CVS stores in San Francisco will be closing. They're going to move out of San Francisco downtown areas. They're going to move to the outskirts. So there should be no consequences for actions of looting. And so now you have these women. They rob a store. Not only do they rob the store, there's no consequences for robbing it, but now there's a consequence by the police. And now I guess the thought process is there should be no consequences for trying to run down police officers. Got it. Okay. See, so the lawlessness is accepted by the black community, by black leaders. So where are the black leaders of the world, okay, in the United States demanding that this looting stop, that demanding that this the attacks on law enforcement stop? Where are they? I mean, wouldn't you think that should be the prime objective, is let's stop with this lawlessness and let's start being civilized nation that we are? I mean, I'm not getting it.
Ponderous.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, they want that identity, okay? They want the identity of these black ministers and black preachers. So where are the leaders of the black community demanding that this looting stop? And to let them know that there are consequences for their actions, and it could be lethal. So if you go after a police officer and you use your vehicle as a weapon, it's just like pointing a gun at that officer. The officer has a right to defend himself and or herself, and you could get dead.
Yeah, BLM, that should be their message. NAACP, that should be their message.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris,
and
that should be her message. Obama, that should be his message. President Biden, that should be his message. But they want this unrest. This is part of the Marxist ideology. They want to divide us. Just like with the black national anthem at the football game, it's not so much the black national anthem, it's just that is dividing us as a country, and we can't have that to be strong. If you want to divide us to break us, well, then you'll succeed, and I think that's what they want to do. They want to divide us to break us.
And you know, there was a real good positive story this weekend, right, that happened on Saturday, and it happened at the U.S. Open tennis match where 19-year-old Coco Gauff won. She beat Aryna Sabalenka, and she beat her in three sets. It was the 50-year anniversary of equal pay to women at the U.S. Open, where women got the same prize money as men. But here is a story of a young lady, 19 years old, who suffered a couple of defeats in majors but persevered. And she made it her mission to get better, and she did. And she ends up winning her first Grand Slam major. And it'll be the first of many. I don't know if you follow her, but I am just absolutely – I love this girl. This young lady has got a smile on her, and her game is just incredible. It was so good to watch. She and Sabalenka really put on a great match. But this could have been – this should be the positive nature of the black community, because Coco Gauff is black. And it doesn't matter. Her parents raised a beautiful young lady. She's articulate. and she has a drive. She works hard to be the best in her business. And, you know, this is the example that should be put up for the black community. And yet everyone is quiet in the black community. They're quiet about the looting. They're quiet about the illegalities. And then when you have a positive, force right now, and it would be this young lady, Coco Gauff. She could be the inspiration for young black children, okay, to be the best in their craft, whatever that may be. And so don't tell us that you don't have the ability to do it, because this young lady has proven it. She did it by hard work, perseverance, and desire, and everybody has that. And she took advantage of the American dream. And now she's a winner. She won $3 million this past week. And she freaking dominated, except for two matches. She went three sets in two matches. Her first match and the finals. And seven matches she won in straight sets. I mean,
she got dominated her first set, and then came back from that and then won the last two, which is pretty amazing.
Yes.
So yeah, good for her.
Yeah, it's great. So, I mean,
where was Serena Williams? Did she come out and say anything? Where was she? Was she quiet?
No, she didn't compete this year. She took this year off. So, I mean,
I know she didn't compete. Oh. I'm just saying, did anybody interview her? Because I don't remember seeing her on any of the sports shows, but I could have missed it too. So,
yeah, I did too. Well, I was listening to Chris Everett. She did interview her after. She did the interview after the match.
She looked good, or what?
Man, she looks great, Chris Everett, doesn't she?
Yeah, she aged well. I thought she was kind of cute, and she's aged well.
She's got to be close to 70, right? She's got to be in her mid, late 60s or mid 60s, right?
No, I would say 60s.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh. But then again, that's looking
great.
Young to me now. Yeah.
Oh,
it's all relative. It changes. It changes. Now 45 looks really young.
Oh, the good old days.
Oh, I tell you. Once you cross 60, boy, it changes.
The aches and the pain.
Unless you're President Biden, and then if you're President Sniffy Pants Sniffy, then those barriers don't apply to you at all, because you're just wired in a different way. So.
Yeah. All right, I gotta go. So hey,
all right.
Enjoyed it.
Good show.
Congratulations, happy anniversary, and it's a somber day, but it's also a significant day for us and as well. So,
hey, well, thank you for all you do with keeping this going, and much appreciated on my end.
That's fun. You got some great people. Thanks for it. All right.
All right. Adios, amigo.
All right. Well, thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.